Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Gabriele Gorelli, Italy's first master of wine. Congratulations, you've just become a master of wine after a lot of hard work. How did that feel?
Well, it's just such a relief, but at the same time, it is a liberation. It is a liberation from a burden, a pressure, on not only on being the first, but just on arriving to the endeavor that I had set to myself in 2014. And at the same time, it's a liberation of an energy that I always had to put on that. But at this moment, it feels like it's free to be conveyed in new projects.
Okay, so it's a little bit of a liberation.
Right.
So what would your tips be to students in general, but also particularly for students whose first language isn't English? And what would your key tips be? How to win at Master of Wine?
Well, something I didn't do, but I would strongly recommend, because in itinere, I started to understand how important it is to do the WSET certifications up to the diploma. And that would allow any student, even of second language or third, to really get into the actual way of systematically assessing a wine, and also have everything that it's cool and good to know about wines of the world, because we do not have in Italy any certification that provides such a broad overview about the wines of the world. You need to go to the WSET. By the time you did the WSET, and you're done with that, with your diploma, you have the knowledge, the basics, the foundation of your knowledge that you can work on. And of course, it takes a lot of work to become somebody that can just reconvey the sort of book knowledge in an exam, like diploma students are asked to. But for the Master of Wine, you need to strongly, critically think about the why. We are not asked the what and the how, but we are strongly asked about the why. By the time you have the foundation of your knowledge to wrap your head about that, you can start working on the why, which is the most important thing.
I mean, were there any moments when you were think, you know what, this is too difficult, I'm going to give up, or you were just very determined that you knew you would get there in the end?
Well, I'm used to finish what I've started. And of course, I had the opportunity to do that, but I had the strong willingness to finish. The commitment in this sort of journey is everything. And even if the program says in the syllabus, the institute tells you that it is an individual study program, I think this cannot be done if you're not in a collective environment. I mean, you need people to support you. Other students are needed to establish these sort of give and receive relationship. And it is not only about knowledge, it is not only about the actual exam preparation, but it is also about energy. You know, some people at some point would go down with their energy, and you need other people that are strongly committed and possibly in a more uplifting sort of a moment to support you. That's the most important thing. So I felt like sometimes I also really was looking at the top of the mountain from the valley. And even while I was doing my dissertation, my research project, and you know, when you're there, it's a matter of time. You know you will be finishing. it's not like before you pass the exam, so you don't know whether you have the attempts needed to actually get through, but you know you will be getting there at some point. But at some point you get so tired, you get so a bit, I would say, fed up about everything, and you need people to support you. That is the most important thing.
It's interesting you say that about the dissertation, because in the old days it was a little bit easier, I think, the dissertation. It was like a long essay. And I remember coming back from Verona in the car with you last time, and you, I said, come on, you've only got your dissertation to do. It's not that difficult. And you were quite cautious about that. I mean, you didn't take it for granted. And now that you've, I didn't want to push you either in the car, because we're both exhausted after tasting about 4,000 wines in 2 days. But it's interesting to say that you see that you've really got to keep going the bitter end. Don't give up. Don't give up. So that's really good advice. And I'm sure you, as a mentor, you're going to be such a good mentor to people. You know, you're young and a lot of energy. And if you're saying, listen, this is not something, we all know it's going to be difficult, but it's even harder than you think it's going to be, right to the bitter end. That's really good advice. And then students can pace themselves. What did you do? I mean, in terms of obviously your family, I'm sure very relieved. Was it quite difficult getting back into the family routine from of the elation of getting this thing out of the way? Were they very pleased? I know you've got a small family as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They were pleased. They were so relieved because they have been living that since the beginning. Especially my girlfriend Azzurra, she was with me since the very beginning. Actually, she holds part of the responsibility of letting me join the institute, because she forwarded me the email about the symposium of the Institute of Mussels and Wine in May 2014. And when this happened, I wasn't actually aware of what we were talking about. So I had to investigate a bit, and I understood that the Institute was also supporting, together with the Istituto Grandi Marchi, was also making this masterclass to, you know, get an intake of Italian students. Not only Italian, even Spanish and French students were allowed into the masterclass in order to have people that have no diploma, WSET certification, but to get them closer to the Institute and possibly inside the Institute, with the aim of having a master of wine from those countries, especially Italy, of course. So my family, especially my girlfriend, she holds a bit of the responsibility for me to have joined, and she had accounted for that. I mean, she had always been supporting me over time in the worst moment of my, you know, process of my journey. She was there, and of course, after our baby was born, actually 1 month before I sat the exam, which I was the first to pass the practical, it has been a roller coaster of emotions, absolutely, and that is absolutely stunning, because you feel like you are achieving a couple goal. It is not only a personal goal, it is first personal, then it's a couple goal, and then it's a country or an industry goal if you go through this process.
Yeah, I remember you were talking about your little baby, and you're a very hands-on dad as well, and so that again must have been quite difficult. You probably felt a bit guilty at times that you were maybe not spending enough time with a little baby or whatever. But whenever I see you in Montalcino, because we often bump into each other, he's always got his baby either in his hand or within about 2 meters. So yeah, you're a very hands-on dad. Now, the Gorelli family name in Montalcino is quite well known. Just tell us a little bit about your family.
Yeah, I think it's funny because we have been talking about that just 1 year ago. Right before the lockdown, I was talking with you on the Italian Wine Podcast about especially my family background. So I've been immersed, I would say surrounded, but possibly sieged by wine since the very beginning, because my grandpa Giancarlo, he used to be the smallest Brunello di Montalcino producer. intended as an actual bottler of Brunello. So he had his own label, the Gorelli label, which lasted until 1998 vintage. And I was a little boy at the moment. But I sort of felt like the rhythm of the vineyards and all the rituality of these things you do in the vineyards, you do in the cellar, are something that are really sort of innate nature for some people. And I was so into it because I wanted to be as my grandpa, as my dad, as my uncle were. So into that, all together committed to produce a teeny tiny amount of wine, but of beautiful quality. And also, I had the opportunity these last few days to open some bottles of my grandpa. Actually, I opened one 97 Brunello, which was still absolutely stunning wine with an inner modernity that I wouldn't have expected. If I look back on how they were working in the cellar, I mean, everything was super clean, but the actual cask where he was fermenting the grapes year to year, he used to punch it down with a piece of wood that it was always the same from one year to another, no? So you know that you could have contamination, you could have many things, but I mean, it did yield such wonderful wine with sucrosité sans sucre, ripeness, but still a saline touch, unbelievable wines produced in a very rudimental way. And this is fantastic because it tells you that, okay, the end of the man, it's something that is important in the process, but the terroir, the place this wine has been produced was doing most of the thing.
Where was the vineyard for that wine?
Le Due Portine, Giancarlo Gorelli.
He's no longer with us?
No. It's been 13 years already. He passed away.
So, obviously, being from Montalcino, what are your favorite areas in Montalcino in terms of vine expression and wine expression?
I think the most classic area is something that has always had another gear in expression and in longevity. So the wines from the most calcareous part of Montalcino, especially Montosoli, to me have a sort of inner energy that the rest of the appellation still has, but in a more gentle way. I mean, the assertiveness of a wine made on calcium carbonate with such exposition, it's still something that touches me a lot.
Okay. And what about the south of Montalcino? Do you like the wines from the south, which tend to be a little bit bigger, a little bit broader, a little bit more exotic compared to Montosoli?
Well, yes, provided those come from producers that are really taking care of the vineyards more than their wines, especially if we're talking about producers that are higher in altitude but are south, especially southeast facing, and they are on the galestro soils, so on the schist, and these give the wines a more austere touch. Those are might be exotic for the alcohol levels for the body, but those are austere wines, absolutely, that are strongly conveying the harshness of the soil.
Yeah, we seem to think alike. I mean, the Galestro wines are they have that wonderful texture and intensity and that sort of smoothness, and they're very versatile with food, and there's no sort of degree of difficulty with those particular wines. How about, do you detect any market trends, wine in general, not just in Montalcino? What would you say is happening in the world of wine right now? Where is the future of it?
Well, I think we need to get more consumers from the youngsters. And this is done with the creation of, over time, we need to create something new to people, something attractive, because those people, the youngsters, are not talking about millennials, because I am a millennial too, and millennial, we are already almost 40 years old. So we need to go to Generation Y. We need to go to people that really are about to be introduced to wine and how to catch their attention. I think we do have two points to really strongly assess and evaluate. The first one is producing more contemporary styles of wine, because we have been, especially Italy, we have been deemed to produce wines with a strong or almost always present oxidative character. No, these wines that usually, because of that, taste a bit dry and are not really suitable to the international palate because of their dryness. That's why every expert or wine guy in the trade say, okay, Italian wines are very tannic, but like Sangiovese is very tannic, which isn't actually the case. It's something that happens because of many interaction between anthocyanins and tannins, and it is the vinification style that the winemaking process that strongly impacts these sort of dryness and assertiveness of the tannins. I think we can go in a way that we can better manage the tannins. We shouldn't wait for 5-10 years before drinking one wine because of the polymerization of its tannins is not complete or is not enough to be drinkable. So we should aim for wines that represent an entrance to a region. If we want to talk about Montalcino, Rosso is the way, because Rosso is a more contemporary style of wine, because it has more crunchy fruit, it is more giving, it is more generous sort of wine in the beginning. It is something that can achieve, the endeavor of getting a consumer up to the Brunello and then up to the Reserva or up to the single vineyard. But those consumers must be catched, especially because they are young, must be catched by curiosity. And then they want to investigate. They are curious and they want, they probably are not loyal, but they are curious. They want to get deeper and deeper inside the thing. And so then we have especially single vineyards and single expression of areas. We need to catch them with these sort of depth of knowledge that can be improved and improved over time.
It's interesting you say that about Rosso di Montalcino. I was at Biondi Santi about, I think, 2 weeks ago, obviously got relatively new owners. And we were talking about Rosso di Montalcino, and it is such an underrated wine. As you say, it's the stepping stone to the world of Brunello and all its magic. And I hope the producers take their Rossos a little bit more seriously. Those that do make absolutely stunning wines, as you know, incredible value. Some of them are like mini Brunellos at like a third of the price. Hopefully that push will come over time. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today, Gabriele, that we've missed?
Oh, well, tonight we are doing a session with Stevie about how to taste Italian wine like a pro. So that would be a strongly expansive session together with my fellow students, Andrea Lonardi and Pietro Russo. And I think we will cover a lot of, suggestions about Italian wines. I just wanted to thank you very much, because I understood that you have always believed in me as a student. Last year interview, it is a proof of that. And I'm so happy. I'm so glad to have you really in 5 kilometers from here, so we can continue to interact.
Just want to say thanks to my guest today, Gabriele Gorelli from Montalcino, master of wine, Italy's first, very modest, down-to-earth guy, got a super brain, and you share your knowledge beautifully. And if I was a student for the MW, I would absolutely want to have you as my mentor. You encapsulate the you know, the dedication needed to do what you've done, and your communication skills are second to none. And you're a very likable chap as well, and you make it sound a little bit easier than possibly it is, so you don't shock people either. So you've got a fantastic career ahead of you, and you've done some great things as well already. So enjoy, and enjoy your little baby as well. Don't forget the baby. That's more important than anything. Gabriele, you've been superstar. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been always a pleasure to talk with you, and let's keep up. Let's keep in touch.
Take care.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through ItalianWinePodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.